Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Least of These, where I cover the cases that need it most because every life matters and everyone deserves justice. I'm your host, Leah D. It's spring break and I was supposed to be off this week, but there has been a huge update in the case of Tony Mitchell in Walker County, Alabama, and I couldn't wait to tell y'all all about it. Nearly a year ago today, I told you the story of Anthony Tony Mitchell, who died in custody at the Walker County Jail. It was way back in episode 108, titled Death at the County Jail. In case you missed it, I'll link the episode in the show notes. And if you didn't, but you don't remember all the details, don't worry, I'm going to go back over the main points. So, without further ado, let's get right to it. On January 12, 2023, 911 was called to 33-year-old Tony Mitchell's house on Lost Creek Road in Carbon Hill in Walker County, Alabama. The caller was his cousin Steve, who was concerned that Tony was suffering a mental health crisis. When officers arrived, according to Walker County Sheriff's deputies, they found Tony in his yard with a handgun. Tony fired a shot and then ran in the wooded area behind his house. SWAT was called in and Tony was apprehended in the woods. At the time he was arrested, Tony allegedly had black spray paint all over his face. He told arresting officers that he had painted his own face black because he was planning to enter a portal to hell located inside his house. At that point, it was clear, or damn sure should have been, that Tony Mitchell was suffering a mental health crisis. According to court documents, Tony's family was told by the sheriff's public information officer, TJ Armstrong, that Tony was a little roughed up, he'd taken a shot at officers, and they were planning to charge him and set his bond high enough that he wouldn't be able to get out. Armstrong went on to say, "We're going to detox him and then we'll see how much of his brain is left," or something pretty close to that. Tony Mitchell was booked in the Walker County Jail on attempted murder charges. That was January 12, 2023. After Tony was booked, he was placed in BK5, which is also known as the drunk tank. It's a holding cell, which is normally used as a temporary place to hold a detainee while they sober up. It's called a cell, but it ain't really a cell. There's no furniture, no bed, no toilet. It's a concrete box with a drain in the floor. At booking, Tony was placed on suicide watch, so his clothes were taken, and while initially he was given a sleeping mat, suicide watch garments, and a blanket, everything was taken from him early on in his stay at the Walker County Jail. Over the next 2 weeks, Tony's dentures were taken, he was dragged out of BK5 by deputies, seemingly to be given a shower, returned naked and dripping wet, tased, and left completely alone lying on a bare concrete floor. Without his teeth, he was unable to eat or communicate with the jail staff properly. In the early morning hours of January 26, 2023, 33-year-old Tony was clearly in medical distress. But hours passed as jail officials shuffled in and out of his cell before he was dressed in an inmate uniform, placed in a wheelchair, and taken to Walker Baptist Hospital, where doctors fought to save his life. Dr. Timothy Jordan, the ER provider, made the following note that is contained in Tony's medical records and reads in part, "I have limited information on this patient other than was provided by sheriff deputies that accompanied the patient to the hospital. I was told by one of the deputies that the patient has been incarcerated since January 12th. I was also told by the deputies that the patient has not been eating or drinking for several days. He was brought to the emergency room by sheriff's deputies in a car for evaluation. One of our nurses noted the sheriff moving the patient out of the vehicle and putting him in a wheelchair, and he went outside and offered to move him to a stretcher. At that point, he was noted to have agonal respirations, breathing 2 to 4 times a minute. He was rushed into the ER and moved to our stretcher. He was unresponsive, apneic, and pulseless and cold to the touch. CPR was started and handcuffs were removed." Another note in the file stated that during the attempted resuscitation, patient was unresponsive but occasionally made some agonal movements, including swallowing and minor movements of an arm or leg. This is while CPR with external compression devices in progress. Initial rectal temperature was 72 degrees Fahrenheit, 22 degrees centigrade. He appeared to have vomitus on his uniform. While medical staff fought for Tony, the sheriff's mouthpiece called the family. According to the lawsuit, Officer T.J. Armstrong told cousin Steve that they had, quote, had a time with Tony, and this was the worst case of addiction they'd ever seen. He continued on telling Steve that Tony's body temperature had started dropping that morning and that he'd been taken to the hospital. According to Steve, Armstrong claimed Tony had suffered a massive heart attack once they got to the ER. Tony was pronounced deceased that afternoon. But as we know, Tony Mitchell didn't die from the worst case of addiction or a heart attack. According to the ER doctor who treated him, he died from hypothermia. Another note written by Dr. Jordan and placed in Tony's medical records reads, "I am not sure what circumstances the patient was held in incarceration, but it is difficult to understand a rectal temperature of 72 degrees Fahrenheit, 22 degrees centigrade, while someone is incarcerated in jail. The cause of his hypothermia is not clear. It is possible he had an underlying medical condition resulting in hypothermia. I do not know if he could have been exposed to a cold environment. I do believe that hypothermia was the ultimate cause of his death. How exactly does someone die of hypothermia in the controlled environment of a jail?" Tony's family filed a lawsuit claiming that he was placed in a restraint chair in the jail's kitchen walk-in freezer or similar frigid environment and left there for hours the night before he died. And when news of the lawsuit broke, the Walker County Sheriff's Office fired back through their attorneys in a court filing, writing in part, "These allegations are the definition of scandalous, based on nothing but speculation. The plaintiff being Tony's family, accuses the defendants being jail staff, of murder of Mitchell by placing him in a freezer until he suffered and died from hypothermia, and then accuse the defendants of covering up the murder." It went on to say, "These speculative allegations are false. Mitchell's incarceration is captured on video. He was not held in a freezer. In fact, the only times that he left the booking area was to attend his 72-hour hearing and to be transported to the hospital. These allegations intentionally created a firestorm of derision that swept not only these defendants, but law enforcement in general, and caused criminal investigations to be opened against the defendants. This case embodies the adage, a lie is halfway around the world before the truth can put on its boots. And bullshit is bullshit no matter who smells it first. The sheriff's office acted like they were insulted that they had been accused in any way of even contributing to Tony's death, and they especially took issue with the whole being placed in the freezer thing. Like, this was the most preposterous thing they had ever heard. And while they attempted to make it clear that Tony was never placed in a freezer, they totally ignored the or similar frigid environment part that came at the end of that sentence. The family filed an amended complaint, and the allegations were far more horrendous than putting an inmate in a freezer. Stay with me on this one. Let's say, for argument's sake, in a moment of stupidity, detention deputies put Tony in an actual freezer. As a prank, as punishment, for whatever ridiculous reason, putting a human in a freezer is a very bad choice, and that's putting it mildly. It's idiotic, it's against everything a detention deputy should stand for, it's wrong, and it shouldn't ever happen. But it's one terrible decision. One. That's bad enough. But as Tony's family obtained more video footage and more witnesses came forward, like Deputy Karen Kelly, who leaked the video of Tony's lifeless body being thrown in the back of a police SUV. If y'all remember, Deputy Kelly was fired for leaking that video, which showed Tony was in no way alert and conscious, as the Walker County Sheriff's Office claimed when he left the jail on January 26th. Anyhow, as the family and their lawyers got more information, it became crystal clear that Tony's death was not the result of one bad decision. Tony hadn't died from addiction, a heart attack, or even from being placed in a walk-in freezer. Tony Mitchell was murdered. And not only was he was murdered in a cruel and calculated way. Remember that statement from the sheriff's office about Tony's incarceration being captured on video? Well, they were sure right about that one. Video doesn't lie, and what the video showed during Tony's period of incarceration was deeply disturbing. According to the amended complaint, during the nearly 14 days Tony was held at the Walker County Jail in cell BK5, he was taken out of that cell to use the bathroom or shower a total of 6 times. 6 times in 14 days. Remember, this holding cell doesn't have a bathroom, just a drain in the floor. A drain that has to be flushed by staff outside the cell, and a drain that has a grate covering it, a grate that prevents fecal matter from going down. Tony Mitchell was allowed to shower and/or use the restroom 6 times in 14 days. At times on the video during his incarceration, fecal matter was visible on his nude body, and in 14 days, his cell was only cleaned 4 times. To make matters worse, since Tony was on suicide watch, his meals were served in a brown paper sack, with no utensils and no drink. Tony had to use his hands to eat, and of course he wasn't taken out of his cell to wash his hands before, and at times he wasn't given anything to drink at all. So Tony was in that cell nearly or completely naked, depending on the day, at times covered in feces, with feces on the floor of his cell, eating with his hands, without his dentures. I feel like I have to say here that this happened in the United States of America. And at the time, Tony was a pre-trial detainee and had been convicted of no crime. He was naked, eating in a shit-smeared cell with his hands and without his teeth and given nothing to drink. You put a dog, cat, or take your pick of an animal in the same situation, and it's literally a crime in all 50 states. And in most, it's a damn felony. Tony Mitchell was a human being in the midst of a mental crisis who was still cloaked in the presumption of innocence. You know, that whole cardinal principle of our justice system of innocent until proven guilty. He still had that going for him. But despite that, Tony was tased, drug around the concrete floor by deputies by his ankles, all while he was handcuffed, not given proper medical treatment after these incidents, and at times on the video, it appeared he was too weak to stand. Oh, and he was also denied water. According to the amended complaint, on the morning of January 19th, surveillance video shows Tony lying with one arm out of the cell, begging the deputies for more water after they had given him a single cup. As Tony begs, instead of refilling his cup, Officer Morgan Madison went into the cell and drug Tony away from the door. The next day, so that brings us to January 20th, the video shows Tony wet and naked from the shower, attempting to walk back to BK5. He slipped, his legs buckled beneath him, and he fell on the booking room floor. It appeared Tony was unable to get up. Supervisor Denzel Mitchell, who is no relation, didn't try to help Tony up, get a wheelchair, or call for medical. Instead, he dragged Tony by his ankles across the booking room floor back to the door of BK5. He and another deputy then lifted Tony up to a standing position, but Tony was still unable to stand on his own, so they just shoved him into the cell. Tony tumbled to the floor of BK5, and the deputies closed the door. The last time Tony appeared outside of his cell was Saturday, January 21st. Detention deputies opened his cell door. The video shows Tony partially rolling out of BK5. Officers picked him up and Tony stood bent over with his hands on his knees, leaning against the wall as a trustee fastened a suicide watch garment around his body. During the time he was outside of his cell, Tony never stood up fully or walked anywhere. It appeared he was too weak to do so. After a few moments, he was taken back into BK5 without being taken to the shower or bathroom. Tony wouldn't leave that cell again until the morning of January 26th. January 23rd, 24th, and 25th, he was left inside BK5, the doors only being open long enough for deputies to toss bags of food in, which, remember, did not contain anything to drink. In fact, the last time Tony was seen being provided a cup of water was around 4:30 a.m. on January 23rd. Witnesses claim that Tony repeatedly asked for water, but for whatever reason was denied that request. For over 70 hours, Tony Mitchell was not given a simple cup of water. Does this sound like torture to anyone else, or is it just me? And y'all know it only gets worse from here, because there was something to that whole freezer or frigid environment part of the story. You know, what the Walker County Sheriff's Office called salacious and completely denied? Well, according to the amended complaint, it wasn't an actual freezer, as maybe they had originally thought. I mean, there aren't too many frigid environments inside a jail in Alabama, or at least you wouldn't think so. So you can see why that's what most people thought when they learned a man had died of hypothermia inside the jail. Their minds went to a freezer. But it turns out in Tony's case, it wasn't the walk-in freezer. But there was another frigid environment inside that jail. And that was the isolation cell BK5 that Tony had been held in during the entirety of his incarceration. BK5 had been nicknamed the freezer by staff and inmates because of how cold it could get. How did it get so cold inside that cell, you might ask? Well, according to the complaint, correctional officers were able to manipulate the air vents to allow cold air to blow in from outside. Inmates that had previously been housed in BK5 told lawyers for Tony's family that it got so cold in that cell they could see their breath and their fingers went numb. The temperature on the night of January 25th was in the low 30s. And other inmates that were in the Walker County Jail that night, in the cells in the booking area, also complained about it being cold. One female inmate told officers repeatedly that it was freezing in her cell and she was told to live with it, that it was too bad, or she was just ignored. If it was freezing in her cell, can you imagine how cold it was in BK5? Another inmate was shivering uncontrollably. And as for Tony, well, we don't know. At this point, he had been deprived of water for days, and if the videos are any indication, he was too weak to put up much of a fight. So instead, he lay there on a bare concrete floor with frigid air being blasted into his cell. Now, detention deputies were aware that this man hadn't been given water, since they're the ones responsible for giving it to him, and they obviously would have known the cell was freezing. One, because someone had to manipulate the system for that to happen, and two, because complaints were made from other inmates. They were also well aware that Tony's condition had declined. His cell door was open multiple times and sacks of food were thrown in that day. At one point on the video, at approximately 10 p.m. on January 25th, corrections officers Bailey Ganey and Braxton Key opened Tony's cell door. They're captured on video speaking to him or shouting at him. There's no audio, so it's hard to tell. But what is obvious is that Tony is in distress. He's captured on video too, lying on the floor of the cell, barely able to raise his head in response to the two officers. What makes it even worse is that according to the lawsuit, Braxton Key was previously employed with Regional Paramedic Services. If it's obvious on grainy surveillance video, shouldn't it have been obvious to someone standing there live and in color with previous medical experience? Tony Mitchell languished on the floor of that cell for nearly 6 more hours before an officer brought a cup of water at 3:30 a.m. on January 26th. However, at this point, Tony was too weak to sit up and drink the water. At 4:17 a.m., medical staff advised that Tony needed to be taken to the hospital. 4:17 a.m. So at this point, we all know that everyone for sure knows Tony needs medical attention. It's documented. But medical staff at the jail advised that it could wait until the next shift arrived. That wasn't for two more hours. Notes from the jail practitioner state that Tony was cool to the touch, difficult to arouse, but eyes open to commands, no verbal communication, moans and mumbles. Despite this, he was left in that cell, in that condition, until 8:54 a.m., because after shift change, officers had to deal with an unruly inmate booking, so that took precedence over Tony's declining medical condition. Hours after it was clear that Tony was in distress, he was placed in that patrol vehicle and finally taken to the hospital. As we know, despite life-saving measures, Tony was pronounced deceased at 1:15 p.m. The treating physician at Baptist Hospital believed Tony's cause of death was hypothermia. And as it turns out, he was right. After the videos of Tony's lifeless body being carried out of the jail were released to the public, it was announced in February of 2023 that the Alabama Law Enforcement Agency, or ALEA, and the FBI were investigating. One piece of that investigation is now complete, and that's Tony's autopsy. The results were made public just days ago on February 29, 2024. The Alabama Department of Forensic Sciences conducted the autopsy. While the full results of that autopsy haven't been made public yet, the death certificate was released. That death certificate states that Tony Mitchell's manner of death was homicide, and his cause of death was hypothermia with underlying causes of sepsis resulting from infected injuries obtained during incarceration and medical neglect. The Walker County Sheriff's Office, with Sheriff Nick Smith leading the way, can say all they want that the claim that Tony Mitchell was placed in a freezer or in a jail cell referred to as a freezer was salacious and done to ignite a firestorm. But the fact is that a 33-year-old man was injured during incarceration, neglected to the point that his body became septic, and ultimately froze to death inside their jail. Tony Mitchell was murdered in the jail in an isolation cell with no one having access to him other than detention deputies. And I'm not saying that. The Alabama Department of Forensic Sciences did. Is it salacious when they say it too? Many officers had contact with Tony in the 2 weeks he was held in the Walker County Jail, and someone or someones turned his cell into a freezer the night of January 25, 2023. The investigation into Tony's murder is ongoing, and if it's impartial and just the way it should be, charges should be around the corner. And if I had to take a guess, multiple officers will end up being charged. But up to this point, as far as I'm aware, most, if not all of the officers, well, except Deputy Karen Kelly, named in the lawsuit are still employed in Walker County. You'd think that they'd at least be suspended pending what is for sure now a criminal investigation, but it appears they have not. Tragically, Tony's family is not alone. The Walker County Jail has a dark and disturbing history. In episode 109, I told y'all the story of Vincent Rowell, and the investigation into his death at the Walker County Jail is still ongoing. Multiple lawsuits are still pending from former inmates claiming mistreatment, medical neglect resulting in death or serious injury, and unsafe conditions. For a county that's only 805 square miles with a population of 64,000 residents, there sure do seem to be a lot of inmates dying at the Walker County Jail. A lot of them lost to medical conditions that are easily treatable, or in Tony's case, caused by staff at the jail. And that's completely unacceptable. I get it, jail isn't supposed to be a vacation. But in this country, everyone deserves to make it alive to their day in court. This goes without saying, but I am following this case very closely and will continue to bring you updates as they become available. And that, my friends, is all I got this week. I'll be back Thursday with an all-new episode, so make sure you hit that subscribe button if you haven't already so you don't miss it. In the meantime, you can find me on Instagram at least_ofthese or my Facebook at least of these podcast. And if you're sick of ad interruptions, I've got good news for you. You can get all your episodes ad-free, just the way you like them, for just $2 a month. And as a member of Patreon, you'll be the first to be notified when new tiers will be launched with exclusive episodes and a few bonus surprises. Head on over to patreon.com/leastofthese to support the show today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for caring. If you know something, say something. And until next time, be good to each other. Really, y'all, I swear I was supposed to be off this week, but I've got a lot to say, so we're coming in hot with another hot take. When I heard the news that Toni Mitchell's death had been ruled a homicide, tears streamed down my face. It was news I wanted to hear since the day I first learned of his case. They were tears of relief and sadness. I was relieved because, to be honest, though I believe everyone involved who knew of Toni's condition and sat idly by while this man died should be charged, I didn't know if we'd ever see that happen. I was relieved that Toni has a chance of getting the justice he deserves. Those tears were also of sadness for the countless other Tonys who have died in similar circumstances and will never get that chance. Every case affects me. I mean, how could it not? But Toni's case hit close to home, because though I didn't personally know Toni Mitchell, I know people like Toni. People who are facing one of the toughest battles a person can go through, and that's an addiction. And that is one of the things I want to talk about today. The latest statistics show that in the U.S. alone, nearly 27.2 million people struggle with substance use disorder. That's an insane number, and so is this one. More than 100,000 Americans die of drug overdose in a single year. And overdoses on synthetic opioids like fentanyl are the leading cause of death for Americans age 18 to 45. If anything else was killing people at this rate, every damn politician, lawmaker, celebrity, and even Uncle Joe down the road would be screaming, making a scene, and demanding change. But because there is such a stigma attached, a lot of folks remain silent on the issue. I mean, besides, it's only killing those folks. You know, those addicts over there? Couldn't be me, right? For many, that's the mentality. It doesn't affect me, so why should I care? It only affects those people. That's true until it isn't. Because those people, those drug addicts, well, there are neighbors, friends, brothers, sisters, moms, dads. I could go on forever. But until it hits someone close, it's easy to go on about your life and never give it a second thought. But when it does hit home, everything changes. You're thrust into a whole new world, a scary, dark, and dangerous one. I'll tell you, it isn't easy to watch someone you love walk that path. I know that all too well. It's a whole lot easier to point the finger in judgment and ask that million-dollar question. Why don't they just stop? That's a deep and complicated issue, and one I'm not qualified to speak on, so I won't, other than to say, it's not that simple. 'Cause Lord, if it was, nobody would stay in that life. And before we're so quick to judge, and I'm not just preaching at you or nobody, 'cause I've been there. I've been the judgmental one. I'm not too proud to admit that. Because if I can learn to do better, then anyone can. I'm not sure if y'all have figured this out yet, but I'm pretty damn hard-headed. And there was a time in a land far, far away, or at least that's what it seems like now, where I would have been the first one to point the finger. But now, after a lot of praying and talking to Jesus about it, I realized that I was so, so wrong. And now part of my mission in life is to help those struggling with addiction find the resources and help that they need to get on the path to recovery, and to help their families come to a place of understanding and forgiveness, because that too is a whole nother battle. Before we're so quick to judge, I think we have to realize that we're all just about two steps and a few bad decisions from being in that boat ourselves. Life happens, man, and sometimes really bad things happen. Things that are damn near impossible for a human being to deal with. I've met a lot of people struggling with addiction, and I'll tell you that I've never not once met a single one who told me that, you know, they just willy-nilly started using heroin and loved it so much they aspired to be addicted and they were now addicted and happier than a pig in shit. I've heard a lot of stories, but that's never been one of them. What I have heard is, I was prescribed these pills for pain after a car accident and I can't stop. The person I loved most in my life committed suicide and I felt it was my fault, so I drank to deal with the pain, and now I can't function without alcohol. I was raped as a child repeatedly by someone I loved and trusted, and I turned to crack so I didn't have to feel anymore. My child died and I couldn't cope, so it started with pills, and now I'm addicted to heroin. It's never, I just love getting high, I love my life the way it is, and I don't want to stop. It's never that simple. When I first covered Tony's case, I took a little bit of heat. I got a few DMs because y'all know nobody was bold enough to put that shit on a public forum. But anyway, I got a few messages like, why did you pick this case? He was just an addict. He wasn't murdered. He couldn't be murdered. He was in jail. Or he shot at the cops. What did you expect? Quick news flash, if that's how you feel, maybe this isn't the podcast for you. I'm here to cover cases no matter what, and nobody's going to tell me which victim should get coverage. That's a suggestion I'm just not willing to take. But while we're here, let me say this loud and clear for those in the back. Tony Mitchell wasn't just an addict. He was a man with a family who loved him very much. He was struggling. He lost his dad, the person he was closest to. Life happened and Tony lost his way. He needed help. Hell, that was what the 911 call was for. That 911 call wasn't because anyone was scared of Tony. They were scared for Tony because he was obviously suffering. The man needed help. Should he have shot at the cops? No, I mean, of course not. But Tony wasn't capable of making logical decisions at that point. Nothing about his actions at that time suggests he was thinking rationally. He had a mental break, and I don't really care why. Drug-induced, straight-up mental health, or fun fact, drug withdrawal can also cause a break in reality. But I do not care what caused it. No one got hurt. Thankfully, no officers were injured, and I don't think Tony ever really intended anyone to be. He was scared. He was confused. He was in crisis. He didn't know what was happening. And after he was arrested, the gun was obviously taken. He wasn't combative, and there was no indication he was a threat to anyone. And he clearly wasn't one once he was booked in the Walker County Jail. Hell, he barely had clothes. He didn't attack anyone, he didn't hurt staff at the jail. He was there in that holding cell and under the complete control of detention deputies. What I expect at that point is that he would be treated as a human being. You know, provided the bare minimum, food, water, shelter, and medical care. He shouldn't have been, in my humble opinion, tortured for 2 weeks and left to freeze to death in his cell. Was the jail staff upset that he had fired a round at responding officers? I don't know. Did they not want to deal with him? I don't know. But it doesn't matter because that is literally their job. When I first covered Tony's case, I spoke at length with the deputy first class who had spent 20 years in Florida working in the jail and prison system, and what he said stuck with me, so I'm going to read it again. And I quote, "What is alleged in this case is an embarrassment. As a sworn deputy working in the jail, our job is care, custody, and control at all times in public and in the jail. Care is first for a reason. Just because someone is in jail doesn't mean they aren't human, and it's still our job to protect them. They are members of our community. We should never forget that. It is my job to take care of everyone in my charge. Nurses, clerks, detainees, inmates, it doesn't matter. That's where integrity comes in. We take care of the good guys and the bad and everything in between. Where is their integrity? Where is their character? I wouldn't be able to look my own family in the face knowing I didn't do my job. Y'all heard that right. The man said we take care of the good guys and the bad and everything in between. It doesn't matter what Tony did or didn't do. He could have been a terrible guy. He wasn't, but the point is that it doesn't matter. Their job was to take care of him, and instead they murdered him. Don't get into that line of work if you can't take care of the good, the bad, and everything in between. Hell, I couldn't do it, so I don't. I wouldn't. I know my limits. Shout out to you if you can. Seriously, but I know me, and I'm not about to make sure a murderer gets his lunch on time. I'm not bringing a pillow to the dude who just beat his wife. I don't give a single shit if a pedophile just got his shit rocked on cell block 6. That's none of my business. I'll tell you straight up, I don't have the level of integrity it takes. And neither did they. But again, they shouldn't have been in this line of work if they couldn't do their jobs. I've said it before and I'll say it again. Anyone in a position of authority should be held to a higher standard. Cop, doctor, lawyer, detention deputy, you get the point. Murder is murder no matter who the perpetrator is. And what happened in that jail is murder, plain and simple. Tony Mitchell deserves justice. And I'm so glad we're one step closer to that. All right, y'all. I'll talk at you next week. Love you more than my luggage. Bye, boo thing.